the sacrifice of Prithu Maharaj, Ashwamedha Yagya, the sacrifice of the horse. Maharaj Prithu had performed 99 of them, and as a result of that, the opulence of the earth was incredible. The natural opulences, so wonderful. People who had all the necessities met in a very auspicious, wonderful, pure, natural way. And when he was about to perform the 100th horse sacrifice, which would have made him to have performed as many as Indradev, Indra, out of envy, stole away the horse. And as he stole away the horse, he disguised himself as a holy person, a sannyasi, a mendicant, a renounced person. And he was recognized by Atri Muni, and the son of Prithu Maharaj went after him to bring back Indra with the horse. So each time when the son of Prithu Maharaj was following him, Indra became fearful of the drawn bow and arrows of the sun. And each time he disappeared using his mystic powers, he disappeared, leaving the horse behind. And each time, the son of Prithu Maharaj brought back the horse, and the sacrifice was resumed. But then again, Indra would steal it away and take another disguise. And just as the son of Prithu Maharaj was going to kill him, he would withdraw from that killing because he saw he's a sannyasi. He's a holy person. I cannot do this. But then he would go back and chase him again, and then Indra would become Maharaj, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
It's not beginning now from the younger time, where we are giving class.
No, oh, that's a good instruction, but for another time. Is a good So we're reading from the fourth canto in the story of Prithu Maharaj, and how he is performing. He's on the 100th horse sacrifice, and each time Indra steals away the horse and the son of Prithu Maharaj gets him back. But each time he does it, Indra disguises himself in the dress of a sannyasi, a renounced person. And each time the son of Prithu Maharaj spares him. But in each time again, there's a hypocrisy that's going on. The hypocrisy is that he's in the guise or the external guise of a mendicant, of a holy person, a renounced person. But in his heart, what is motivating him? It's envy. Envy of Prithu Maharaj, and that Prithu Maharaj will excel him, will exceed him in the number of sacrifices he's performed, that Indra has become afraid. So therefore he's determined out of his envy to stop the sacrifices. So outside the dress, the vesha of a religious person, but inside the heart of a materialist, there's a very powerful, many powerful instructions within this. Because the essence of material life is matsarya, or envy. Because, as we spoke about yesterday, this envy ultimately springs from Krishna bhule se jivanadi bahimukh. That is the cause of our being in the material world. It's a turning our back on Krishna, not wishing to accept that. Who are we? Jivera Surupoi Krishna Nityadas, that we are actually Krishna's servant. So not wishing to serve Krishna, Attaiva Maya Tari Samsarira. Look, we are put into the material world. And our entire material existence is based on this envy of Krishna. And then because we are envious of Krishna, We are ultimately envious of everyone. Anyone who has something that we don't have, the spear of envy enters our heart. And if one has envy, there is no position that one can be happy within. And this is what it means to be in the material world. There is no position where one can be happy. Because there is always someone who has something that we don't have. There's that famous story that's been told in the last few years everywhere of this one man. I don't remember who told it first, but one man had a... He was very upset because his neighbor had more wealth than he. So how does the story go? And then he got some kind of a benediction. Well, whatever he got, the neighbor had a benediction that he would have twice as much as him. You know this story? I'm not telling it very well. Yeah. Okay. So the neighbor had the benediction that he would have twice as much as him. So he got another benediction, and some being offered to give him whatever he wanted. So he said, "I want a beautiful big 10-bedroom house." But his neighbor had the benediction that he would have twice as much. So as soon as he got a 10-bedroom house, the neighbor had a 20-bedroom house. And he was proud. He was feeling so satisfied. And then he saw that his neighbor's house was twice as good, and he became so upset. So he next asked for 1,000 cows. And he got his 1,000 cows. And then he looked and he saw his neighbor had 2,000 cows. So whatever happiness he got from his 1,000 cows was completely nullified because his neighbor had more than him. So this went on and on and on. And whatever he got, he would look out and saw that his neighbor had twice as much. So that being came to him and said, "Now what do you want?" And he thought and thought. And he said, "Take out one of my eyes." So that is the nature of envy. I'm willing to suffer anything, long as my neighbor suffers worse than me, twice as bad. Then that's my happiness. So what a world! What a world! And it is simply based on this type of envy. And again, it springs from envy of Krishna, because he has everything and we are simply his insignificant servant. And it is so difficult, practically it is impossible, actually it is impossible for a conditioned soul to accept that he is a servant of Krishna due to the natural or the unnatural envy that sits within his heart. So that has to be removed. So, irreligion is different from religion in this one quality. It is not based on envy. It is based on real religion. It is based on service to Krishna. Pure, unadulterated, uncontaminated, continuous service to Krishna based on love. Based on acknowledgement that who am I? I am Krishna's. This is the sarup, the actual identity of the soul, his form, his existence, is that he is Krishna's servant. The living entity cannot be defined accurately unless it is by this definition that we are Krishna's servant eternally. That is an envy-free heart. So religion is the process of developing this envy-free heart, of acting. Religion means, Bhagavad Dharma means, acting so that Krishna will be pleased. That is the pleasure of the soul when he's trying to please Krishna. He has knocked himself from the center of his existence. But rather Krishna is in the core of his heart. And he's acting to please Krishna. That is the perfection of religion. Prema Pamarto Mahan. And the processes that lead us to those are the religious processes. And the process of devotional service is the process of purifying the heart, cheto, dhavana, marjanam, cleansing the heart of other desires, self-centered, selfish desires. So the hypocrisy that Indra exhibited, he was uncontrolled in this. Again and again, he was shameless. Again and again, he would steal the horse. And again and again, he would be captured. And again and again, he was in the guise of a holy person, but actually his heart was not holy. So how do we feel when we hear about this? Do we think, boy, this Indra, what a hypocrite. How bad is Indra? Is that what we feel? Maybe some of us feel like this. But I know how I feel. It's a horrible feeling to be exposed in this way. To see the envy that exists and the lack of purity and surrender that exists in the heart. By pointing at Indra in the story, we are pointing at all conditioned souls, at ourselves. So what to do? Some people say, I want to be honest and straightforward, therefore I'll be a materialist, because my heart has so many material desires, and that's in the name of honesty and straightforwardness. But actually, that is another kind of trick by the illusory energy. While really what should sprout in the heart is humility. That I'm such a fallen soul, and I have these bad qualities in my heart, and yet I know what is good for me. I know what the truth is. I know that I am Krishna's servant, at least to some degree. I'm a servant of God. But yet still these different things sit in my heart. So humility should come. And humility is the garland that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended that devotees wear continuously upon their necks. Humility. And then, by the virtue, by the grace of humility, by having examined one's heart and seen the inconsistencies and hypocrisy that's there, then the result of that is kirtaniya sadahari. That one then can have the capacity to chant Krishna's names continuously. But this is very, very pure and very, very rare. Very rare and very pure. But this is the price. This type of purity and humility is the price for moving forward in spiritual life. And if we don't want that, or if we don't have that, then obviously it is our misfortune. Obviously, because we can try, if we don't think that it's our misfortune, then we can try and try and try. We can think of all the things that our neighbors have that we don't have, that we want, that we think can make us happy. Everything from being the president of a country to having a house and a swimming pool and so much money and shiny fast cars and this and that. We can make the attempt to satisfy all our desires. Every single one of our desires, and we assuredly will see that none of them actually brings the satisfaction that the promise of having the thing has offered us. But we can try. But better than taking the time and trying is we all we have to do is read the newspapers and see what others who have had these things, what has happened to them. Has anyone even escaped death? What to speak of not even getting the pleasure from these things, but ultimately death, mrityu samsara. Death awaits everyone. So how can one be happy knowing that? And even better than that process, the newspaper examination process, is just here, intelligently and submissively. And then all will be revealed in the Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada explains in the purport to this verse how Indra took the horse and returned. Vijitasva, the son of Prithamaraj, took the horse back from Indra, returned it, and Indra escaped again. But Prabhupada explains, and this is the last verse we read yesterday, since that time when Indra was acting externally as a holy man, but internally with other motives, certain men with a poor fund of knowledge have adopted the dress of a false sannyasi. It was King Indra who introduced this. Ravana also did the same thing in his attempt to kidnap, or his kidnapping of Sita. Prabhupada's purport. Since time immemorial, the sannyas order has carried the tridanda. Later, Shankaracharya introduced the ekadandi sannyasi with one stick instead of three sticks. A tridandi sannyasi is a Vaishnava sannyasi, and an ekadandi sannyasi is a Mayavadi sannyasi. The tridandi sannyasi, the three sticks simplify that he is a servant. The stick that goes like this signifies the jiva, the soul, that I am a servant. The small one is the servant. And how does he serve? With mind, body, words. This is the perfection. The sannyas order is specifically meant for this type of service, complete, dedicated, fully surrendered service to Krishna, fearless service to Krishna. So that is tridandi sannyasi. Ekadandi sannyasi means one, all is one. I am that tatvamasi. I am the supreme. I am none different from that. So that's mayavada sannyasi, sannyas. So there are many types of sannyasis who are not approved by the Vedic rituals. A type of pseudo-sannyasi was introduced by Indra when he tried to hide himself from the attack of Vijitasva, the great son of King Prithu. Now there are many different types of sannyasis. Some of them go naked, some of them carry a skull and trident, generally known as kapalika. All of them were introduced under some meaningless circumstance, and those who have a poor fund of knowledge accept these false sannyasis and their pretenses, although they are not bona fide guides to spiritual advancement. At the present moment, some missionary institutions, without referring to the Vedic rituals, have introduced some sannyasis who engage in sinful activities. The sinful activities forbidden by the shastras are illicit sex, intoxication, meat-eating, and gambling. These so-called sannyasis engage in all these activities. They eat meat and flesh, fish, eggs, and just about everything. They sometimes drink with the excuse that without alcohol, fish, and meat, it is impossible to remain in the cold countries near the Arctic zone. So Prabhupada is speaking about the Ramakrishna mission, especially in India. There are many of these this missionary group that opens up hospitals, and they have sannyasis, but the sannyasis don't follow any principles. They're not even vegetarian. So these sannyasis introduce all these sinful activities in the name of serving the poor, and consequently poor animals are cut to pieces and go into the bellies of these sannyasis. So helping the poor or killing the poor animals. As described in the following verses, such sannyasis are pakandis. Vedic literature states that a person who puts Lord Narayan on the level with Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma immediately becomes a pakandi, as stated in the Puranas, because part of their philosophy is yatamat tatavat, that whatever you worship, whatever you serve, you will get to the final, ultimate goal. You will get to the absolute truth. Whatever you do is all right. That's what the philosophy of this mission is. So Prabhupada is so strongly criticizing it. And he said, it doesn't make a difference if you worship Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma or Durga Devi or Kalima. Never mind, you will get to the Supreme. But this, of course, is not what Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter. So one of the definitions of a Pashandi or a hypocrite is, Prabhupada explains, quotes the Puranas, Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahmarudradhi Devata Devata Samatrenaiva Vikshaita Sapasandi Vavetruvam. In Kali Yuga, the Pakandis are very prominent. However, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has tried to kill all these Pakandis by introducing his Sankirtan movement. Kill them? How has Mahaprabhu killed them? By killing this demonic, hypocritical attitude. So that is the virtue, the great virtue of the Sankirtan movement of chanting the holy names, that the killing is not of the body, but of the hypocrisy by chanting Hare Krishna, the purification of the heart. So all these Pakandis, hypocrites, are killed, will be killed, through Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. Those who take advantage of this Sankirtan movement, of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, will be able to save themselves from the influence of these Pakandis, hypocrites, who say that it doesn't make a difference what you do. Everyone will eventually get there. Everything is ultimately worship of the Absolute Truth. No, actually, it is not like that at all. Worship of the Absolute Truth of Krishna is things that are done for Krishna's pleasure. That is how to worship Krishna, to worship, to act for his pleasure according to what will make him pleased. One can't imagine what will please Krishna. One has to have knowledge, training of what will actually please Krishna. And that training is given by the spiritual master in the disciplic succession. How to please Krishna. How to act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. This is the meditation, the constant meditation of a pure devotee. How can I please Krishna? And it is not artificial for him. It is springing from the love within his heart for Krishna, his gratitude for Krishna, to Krishna. So the Sankirtan movement will kill the demonic attitudes that we carry with us. So Indra introduced this. Text 23. Whatever different forms Indra assumed as a mendicant because of his desire to seize the horse were symbols of atheistic philosophy. Prabhupada explains in the purport. So he's going to continue speaking about this point. These hypocritical points of how irreligion was introduced in the name of religion. According to Vedic civilization, sannyas is one of the essential items in the program of Vanashrama institution. One should accept sannyas according to the parampara system of the acharyas. At the present moment, however, many so-called sannyasis or mendicants have no understanding of God consciousness. Such sannyas was introduced by Indra because of his jealousy of Maharaj Prithu. And what he introduced is again appearing in the age of Kali. Practically none of the sannyasis in this age are bona fide. No one can introduce any new system into the Vedic way of life. If one does so out of malice, he is to be known as a Pashandi or an atheist. So there are so many different created concoctions about what a sannyasi is, what a holy person is in Kali Yuga. So many. so many. And to speak about some of the practices would be embarrassing for us, improper. But so many hypocritical, self-centered, selfish practices that cheat the followers, basically. And ultimately, most of them say that we are all God, and therefore whatever I do is perfect. And you just have to remove the whole world as illusion. All is one, and to see anything other than that is an illusion. So if all is one, then whatever I do is okay. I can do any sinful thing. And it's just an illusion that it appears that I'm doing this. But although, and Prabhupada points out very wonderfully, that although they say everything is an illusion, they become very expert at enjoying that illusion. So it's just hypocrisy. In this way, King Indra, in order to steal the horse from King Prithu's sacrifice, adopted several orders of sannyas. Some sannyasis go naked, sometimes they wear red garments and pass under the name of Kapalika. Prabhupada explained that in the purport. These are simply symbolic representations of their sinful activities. These so-called sannyasis are very much appreciated by sinful men because they are all godless atheists and very expert in putting forward arguments and reasons to support their case. We must know, however, that they're only passing as adherents of religion and are not so in fact. This is the verse, not the purport. Unfortunately, bewildered persons accept them as religious, and being attracted to them, they spoil their life. So many of these people, especially they get involved in illicit sex, the leaders of the sannyasi leaders of the group, and they do it in the name of some kind of tantra or something like that, or helping their disciples overcome their difficulties, engaged in the most horrible activities, cheating activities. And bewildered persons accept them as religious. Prabhupada's purport. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, men in this age of Kali are short-lived, devoid of spiritual knowledge, and susceptible to accept false religious systems due to their unfortunate condition. Kalavasmi yuge janam manda sumanda mateo manda abhagya. This is some of the unfortunateness, abhagya, of Kali Yuga. And thus the people always remain mentally disturbed, upadrutaha. The Vedic Shastras practically prohibit the adoption of sannyas in the age of Kali, because less intelligent men may accept the sannyas order for cheating purposes. Actually, the only religion is the religion of surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that is non-sectarian. All bona fide true religions teach this principle, that we are servants of Krishna and our business is to surrender unto Him. Act to please Him. We must serve the Lord in Krishna consciousness and do that in the mood of trying to please Him with great devotion. Chaitasya sabakamani maya sanyasya matpara bhuri yogam uparashita matchita satatam bhava savadamam prityaja mamekam saranam vija manmana bhavamat bhakto. Think of me and become my devotee. All other symptoms of sannyas and religion are actually not bona fide. In this age, they are simply passing for religious systems. This is most regrettable. Maharaj Prithu, who is celebrated as very powerful, immediately took up his bow and arrows and prepared to kill Indra himself, because Indra had introduced such irregular sannyas orders. So stealing the horse was one thing. Trying to stop the horse sacrifices was another thing. But the introduction of irreligion was intolerable to Maharaj Prithu, and he wanted to kill Indra for doing this. Purport. It is the duty of the king not to tolerate the introduction of any irreligious system. Irreligion in the name of religion shouldn't be tolerated by the government. Since King Prithu is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, certainly his duty was to cut down all kinds of irreligious systems. Following in his footsteps, all heads of state should themselves be bona fide representatives of God and should cut down all irreligious systems. Unfortunately, they are cowards who declare a secular state. Such a man, Prabhupada, is just so heavy, so strongly, not at all shy about saying controversial things that are not the type of statements that are popular in the world. He says they are cowards who declare a secular state. That means that you can do whatever you want. The government won't have anything to do with religion. But Prabhupada explains that the proper way a secular state should be run is that everyone should follow some religious system, and they should follow it properly. And the state will not say you have to be this or you have to be that, but what they will say is that everyone must follow and be a worshipper of God. That is the proper way to have a non-sectarian secular state. Such a mentality, so the cowardly way is we won't get involved in religion. That's what Prabhupada explains. Such a mentality is a way of compromising religious and irreligious systems. But because of this, citizens are generally becoming uninterested in spiritual advancement. Thus, the situation deteriorates to such an extent that human society becomes hellish. So, are we at that state yet, where human society is hellish? A strong argument can be put forward to say yes. The killing, the animal slaughter, the youth so much taken by drugs and intoxication, the anxiety that people are in due to the taxes, to everyone being in debt, the anxiety due to crime, old people being killed, elderly men and women being robbed and killed and beaten. Very, very hellish. Very, very difficult. Diseases, people are so afraid of these horrible, never before heard of diseases. So a very strong argument can be made that it is a hellish world. And the killing between the countries, between the sectarian groups, they just in different places, they just kill, slaughter each other. So many places in the world, this is what goes on, that people just kill each other because you're a member of one group and I'm a member of another group. Killing, just killing. The gentle folk who are devotees in the Hare Krishna movement, they can't imagine practically how a living entity for no reason could kill another, just shoot them or cut off their heads or slit their throats. This is what is going on in so many places of the world. Just people that go to villages and they slit the throats of everyone, men, women, children. Just try to terrify the citizens. It's very frightening. This is real. This is what's going on. Hellish, frightening. So Prithu Maharaj, he would not allow, as the governmental head, the king's head representing the Lord, he would not allow this irreligion to be introduced. Because the result is, when bad things are done in the name of religion, what happens? People say, look at the hypocrisy. And then what do? Huh? Yeah, they say, well, first they start with, why should I follow them? I'll follow my own way. And then gradually, by following their own way, they just follow their own senses, basically, gradually. And then by doing that, then very quickly there's no need for religion. It's just getting in the way, any formulas, and then people are just doing whatever they want. So Pritam Raj decided to act very firmly, and he picked up his bow and arrows. When the priests and the others saw Pritam Raj very angry and prepared to kill Indra, they requested him, "O great soul, do not kill him, for only sacrificial animals can be killed in the sacrifice." Such are the directions given by Shastra. The sacrifice was going on. And it's not that one can do whatever one wants during the sacrifice, even if there is a reason to do something. So the priest told them that no one could be killed at this particular time, only the sacrificial animals. So then they had another idea. They were in agreement with Pritam Raj, but they didn't think it should be done in that way. So they said, "Dear King, Indra's powers are already reduced due to his attempt to impede the execution of your sacrifice. We shall call him by Vedic mantras. We shall force him to come by Vedic mantras, which never have been used before. And certainly he will come. We will force him to come with the Vedic mantras. Thus, by the power of our mantras, we shall cast him into the fire because he is your enemy. We will call him to fall into the sacrificial fire and he will be burnt." Maitreya continues, "My dear Vidura, after giving the king this advice, the priests who had been engaged in performing the sacrifice called for Indra, the king of heaven, in a mood of great anger." The Brahmin priests were also protectors of the principles of religion. When they were just ready to put the oblation, make the offering into the fire that would force Indra to come into the fire, pull him into the fire and get burned, Lord Brahma appeared on the scene and forbade them to start the sacrifice. Lord Brahma came. Pritam Raj didn't want this introduced. Lord Brahma, now I found this very, very interesting. Because if we examine what's happening, Indra is an exalted demigod. He's a powerful and very pure soul. But what caused him to act improperly? What caused him to act improperly? Envy. Envy of what? Of Pritam Raj performing more sacrifices. His fame would increase more than Indra's. His power would increase. So Lord Brahma addressed them as such. So how is this going to be resolved? Naturally, we want to see Indra heavily punished. Why should he be allowed to have such envy in his heart? He should be punished. That's the way we naturally think. "My dear," so Lord Brahma said, "My dear sacrificial performers, you cannot kill Indra, the king of heaven. It is not your duty. You should know that Indra is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's a servant of the Lord. So in that sense, he's like the Lord's arm. His actions are the Lord's actions. You want to kill him?" So Brahma's coming in from a different point of view. "Indeed, he is one of the most powerful assistants of the Personality of Godhead. You are trying to satisfy all the demigods by the performance of this jagya. But you should know that all these demigods are but part and parcel of Indra. He is the king of the demigods. And the purpose of the sacrifice is to satisfy the Lord by satisfying the demigods. And Indra is the king and you want to kill him. How then can you kill him in this great sacrifice?" So see how things turn around so quickly in this world. They're trying to satisfy Indra, and suddenly, because Indra has done something they don't like, they want to kill him. He may have bad motives, but immediately they want to kill him. So Brahma says, no, don't do this. "In order to make trouble and impede the performance of King Pritha's great sacrifice, King Indra has adopted some means that in the future will destroy the clear path of religious life. So look what has happened. He is, Prithviraj is starting to do the sacrifice and Indra is trying to stop him. And in his trying to stop him, just see what has occurred. He's introduced irreligion. I draw your attention to this fact. This is how Indra is reacting. If you oppose him any further, you think you're going to kill Indra, but you won't be able to kill Indra. What will happen? He will further misuse his power and introduce many other irreligious systems. So this is going to cause a bigger system, a bigger problem. You'll try to kill him, and he will outwit you somehow or another, and he will do something by his powers that will cause more trouble. And then your purpose, not only won't you be able to perform the sacrifice, but more irreligion will be introduced. So let's everyone cool down for a moment. So he said, let there be only 99 sacrificial performances from Maharaj Prithu. Amazingly enough, instead of stopping Indra, he suggested that Prithu Maharaj stop. Don't perform 100 sacrifices, stop at 99, and then Indra won't be worried, and he'll stop. This is wisdom. Lord Brahma concluded, this is what Lord Brahma said, let there only be 99 sacrificial performances from Maharaj Prithu. Lord Brahma then turned towards Maharaj Prithu and informed him that since he was thoroughly aware of the path of liberation, what was the use of performing more sacrifices? He was already pure. He didn't need it. The country, the kingdom was fully prosperous. Just stop. This is a solution. Purport. Lord Brahma came down to pacify King Prithu regarding his continual performance of 100 sacrifices. King Prithu was determined to perform 100 sacrifices, and King Indra took this very seriously because Indra himself was known as the performer of 100 sacrifices. Just as it is the nature of all living entities within this material world to become envious of their competitors, King Indra, although King of Heaven, was also envious of King Prithu and therefore wanted to stop him from performing 100 sacrifices. Actually, there was a great competition because too much competition causes envy. So there was a great competition, and King Indra, to satisfy his senses, began to invent so many irreligious systems to obstruct King Prithu. To stop these irreligious inventions, Lord Brahma personally appeared in the sacrificial arena. As far as Maharaj Prithu was concerned, he was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it was not necessary for him to perform the prescribed Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. What would be the gain? Such ceremonies are known as karma, and there is no need for a devotee in the transcendental position to execute them. As the ideal king, however, it was King Prithu's duty to perform sacrifices. So he was doing it, but enough. A compromise was therefore to be worked out, and that is the solution in the family. There's always going to be one problem or another problem, but let things be worked out amicably through a little bit of a compromise. Everyone gives in a little bit so things can go on in a peaceful way. Very important lesson in this, especially for the working of our society. Someone comes and then maybe does something wrong. Someone's maybe been chanting and serving for many years and then does something wrong. And then the tendency is to want to get out. You've done this wrong thing. Yes, you've done this wrong thing. But here a different style of management is suggested by Lord Brahma. It's a little bit of compromise and somehow manage to keep the thing moving, keeping everyone in the family and let the thing move forward. A compromise was therefore to be worked out. By the blessings of Lord Brahma, King Prithu would become more famous than King Indra. Thus, Prithu's determination to perform 100 sacrifices was indirectly fulfilled by the blessings of Lord Brahma, because he became famous as one who compromised in this way for the satisfaction of Brahma so that things can go on, and he's more famous than Indra. Lord Brahma continued, "Let there be good fortune to both of you, for you and King Indra are both part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, you should not be angry with King Indra, who is none different from you. My dear King, do not be agitated and anxious because your sacrifices have not been properly executed due to providential impediments." Listen to this verse in purport. "My dear King, do not be agitated and anxious because your sacrifices have not been properly executed due to providential impediments. Kindly take my words with great respect. We should always remember that if something happens by providential arrangements, if something happens by fate or providence, even if we don't like it, we should not be very sorry, even if it gets in the way of our good plans. The more we try to rectify such reversals, sometimes we have a good plan and something happens that stops our plan and we immediately point to someone. It's your fault. And immediately we take out our bows and arrows. And very often the person did have something to do with it. And maybe it was a fault on his part, some envy or some maya on his part. And then so we take out our bows. And by our trying to stop these things when they happen by providence, the more we enter into the darkest regions of materialistic thought. We think we are the controller. How dare he try to stop something that I am doing? Doesn't he know who I am? Anyway, I'll teach him a lesson that he won't forget." And then, so we get caught by our own desire to even do something good. We get caught. Maya will, this is the potency of Maya, that we try to do something good, and Maya will use that very same thing that we try to do in Krishna's service to trap us in the material world. So we have to proceed very carefully. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Short, very, very weighty and important. Sometimes the saintly or very religious person also has to meet with reversals in life. Such incidents should be taken as providential. What does providential mean?
Godly.
Huh?
Godly.
Not godly, but almost. Huh?
He said destiny.
Destiny, but one, yes. But in what's the Sanskrit word for that? Daivi. So what is the difference between the word daivi and destiny? There's the... Yeah, this God is in the word Daiva. It means it's coming from through higher powers. Ultimately, this is Krishna's. What to do? So sometimes saintly or religious person also has to meet with reversals in life. Such incidents should be taken as providential, as the hand of God. Although there may be sufficient cause for being unhappy, not that you have to be happy about everything that happens to you, one should avoid counteracting such reversals. For the more we become implicated in rectifying such reversals, the more we enter into the darkest regions of material anxiety. Because we're fighting the universe or the Lord who's behind it. You can't. So the more we'll be defeated. So the more we enter into the darkest regions of material anxiety, that means the consciousness is covered. Lord Krishna has also advised us in this connection we should tolerate things instead of becoming agitated. What? Where is Krishna advised toleration? Tamstikshasvabharata. What chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Two, yes. So very important. Of course, this is in perspective. We have to keep in perspective, not that we can't walk over to someone, either literally or figuratively, smack him in the face and he gets angry. He says, "Why did you do that?" And you say, "Well, unless God allowed me to do it, how could it happen?" So therefore, tolerate Prabhu. You always have to say Prabhu when you tell someone something like that. We shouldn't take advantage because... yeah, Krishna's mercy, Prabhu. But we can't outdo Krishna. That, you know, we'll learn some lessons if we try to take advantage of it. Lord Brahma continued, "Stop the performance of these sacrifices, for they have induced Indra to introduce so many irreligious aspects. You should know very well that even amongst the demigods there are many unwanted activities." So he wanted to stop the competition between Indra and Maharaj Prita, even though Prita Maharaj's heart was proper. "Just see how Indra, the king of heaven, was creating a disturbance in the midst of the sacrifice by stealing the sacrificial horse. These attractive sinful activities he has introduced will be carried out by the people in general." So he's predicting that these things would happen. "O King Prithu, son of Vena, you are the part and parcel expansion of Lord Vishnu. Due to the mischievous activities of King Vena, religious principles were almost lost. At that opportune moment, you descended as the incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Indeed, for the protection of religious principles, you have appeared from the body of King Vena." We'll read half of the second half of Prabhupada's purport to this. Somewhat a different topic, but also very important. "When King Prithu is described as an incarnation of Lord Vishnu, it should be understood that he's a Shaktivesh avatar, part and parcel of Lord Vishnu, and is specifically empowered by him. Any living being acting as the incarnation of Lord Vishnu is thus empowered by Lord Vishnu to preach the bhakti cult. Such a person can act like Lord Vishnu and defeat demons by arguments and preach the bhakti cult exactly according to the principles of Shastra. As indicated in Bhagavad Gita, when we find someone extraordinary preaching the bhakti cult, we should know that he is especially empowered by Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna. As confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tarpavartana. One cannot explain the glories of the holy name of the Lord without being specifically empowered by him. If one criticizes or finds fault with such an empowered personality, one is to be considered an offender against Lord Vishnu and is punishable. Even though such offenders may dress as Vaishnavas with false tilak and mala, they are never forgiven by the Lord if they offend a pure Vaishnava. There are many instances of this in the Shastra." So we have to be very careful of this. So Brahma has continued to speak to Prithu Maharaj. "O protector of the people in general, please consider the purpose of your being incarnated by Lord Vishnu. The irreligious principles created by Indra are but mothers of so many unwanted religions. Please, therefore, stop these imitations immediately." So how to stop these creation of imitations? By stopping the 100th sacrifice. The great sage Maitreya continued, "When King Prithu was thus advised by the supreme teacher Lord Brahma, he abandoned his eagerness to perform jagyas with great affection, and with great affection concluded a peace with King Indra." Somehow or another they worked it out and made peace. After this, Prithu Maharaj took his bath, which is customarily taken after the performance of a jagya that's called the avyabhrita. Avyabhrita snan, bath is taken after the completion of a jagya. And so even though the jagya wasn't completed, he still took that avyabhrita snan and received the benedictions and due blessings of the demigods, who were very pleased by his glorious activities. He acted with a generosity of heart, Prithu Maharaj, that made him more famous than if he had performed the 100th sacrifice. With great respect, the original King Prithu offered all kinds of rewards to the brahmanas present at the sacrifice. Since all these brahmanas were very much satisfied, they gave their heartfelt blessings to the king. All the great sages and brahmanas said, "O mighty king, by your invitation, all classes of living entities have attended this assembly. They have come from Pitraloka and the heavenly planets, and great sages as well as common men have attended this meeting. Now all of them are very much satisfied by your dealings and your charity towards them." So that's the end of the chapter, chapter 19, and the end of the first volume of the fourth canto. Very interesting story and how it was worked out. Very interesting pastime. And there's another part of a purport I wanted to read. Let's see if we can, if there's enough time. So I'll just read part of the purport. We're in text 36 where Prabhupada describes again that the cause of Indra's envy and the cause of introduction of so much irreligiosity. So Prabhupada explains that these sacrifices that caused Indra's envy should not be performed in Kali Yuga. But yet, sacrifices should be performed in Kali Yuga, but not that kind. Well, Prabhupada says, "As we have repeatedly explained, due to a lack of qualified Brahmana priests in Kali Yuga, it is not possible to perform the ritualistic ceremonies recommended in the Vedas. Consequently, the Shastras instruct us to perform the Sankirtan Jagya. By the Sankirtan sacrifice, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His form of Lord Chaitanya will be satisfied and worshipped. The entire purpose of performing sacrifices is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna is present in His form of Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, people who are intelligent should try to satisfy Him by performing Sankirtan Jagya. This is the easiest way to satisfy Lord Vishnu in this age. People should take advantage of the injunctions in different shastras concerning sacrifice in this age and not create unnecessary disturbance during the sinful age of Kali." So, Sankirtan. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Tumaraj ki jai, Sri Bhopala ki jai. So there's not really time for questions because it's already late. Thank you. Thank you.